seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Mm, it's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just
day.
A sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. I feel like it's the calm before the storm, Ton, after all that snow this week. And apparently we're going to get a lot more this afternoon.
Yeah, I was really debating this morning on whether to unpack the COVID office, the COVID studio,
and stay in Utah County
and come in remotely. But roads, fortunately, after Spanish Fork, got better. And it was wet. The driving speed was 55, 60, but not bad. So I decided to come up and make the journey, and
glad
I think we'll make
safe.
It home in time.
Glad you're here.
I'm glad I'm here, too. It's just always so much better to do the show in studio with you.
That remote thing's not very much fun.
Well, and there's other things. There's that, the app is awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, the PhilTap app, which we use, but it's just, you know, your phone times out after a while and you've got to keep tapping your phone and you never know if the Wi-Fi is going to go down. And so it's just easier being here.
All right. Well, glad we're both here this morning. A number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open. You can also text us your questions at 57500. We begin the morning, 8 o'clock hour. Always have the plant of the week. And this morning you want to talk about the spider plant. It's one of those tried and true favorites.
It is. And this is one that I think of house plants, it can be one of my favorite and one of my least favorite, depending on how it's maintained.
So favorite because it's unusual from all of the other house plants, kind
it
of
is.
Variegated.
It has
leaf.
A very
it has a personality
unique look.
Of its own.
It looks almost like a little mini palm tree or not yucca because the stems aren't stiff, but it has that kind of feel to it. And like you said, with the variegated leaves and things, and there's several forms out there with the variegated leaves, and it is so easy to grow.
Okay, so then why is it not always your favorite?
If you let it go too long and just let it do its thing, mm-hmm. after 3 or 4 years, it can actually get quite ratty. Looking, and that's more the person, the caretaker's fault than the plants. And so it does need to be transplanted into a new pot at least every 2 years that is bigger than the previous one. And it does, as they mature, have a tendency to put out sprays of little baby plants, little pups. And just to me, if you get too many of those on there, it just starts to look a little bit unkempt. But the fun thing to do with those pups, because they're just ready-made plants, is sometimes to get little pots, little 2-inch flower pots, put some potting soil in, put those plants into the potting soil and root them, and you can give them away as gifts.
Yeah, fun neighbor gift.
Oh, they are. And
housewarming.
If you have kids that you're trying to instill that love of gardening and teach them how to take care of something, you know, the bar's a lot lower with a houseplant as compared to a puppy. But this is something great that the spider plant, as long as it gets some fertilizer and water, that if you want to introduce children to gardening, it's a great way to do it if you have limited space.
Yeah, the article that we have up on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page kind of shows how large they can get. So what's the biggest they get? I mean, if you
I have seen
changing,
them.
Okay, go ahead.
2 to 3 feet high and wide. Mm-hmm. In the biggest situations, those plants are several years old, but they can get that big. But if you don't transplant it as often, you know, you don't want to let it grow until it actually bursts the pot, I mean, literally. Mm-hmm. But if you maybe go every 3 years and keep it healthy but limit the fertilizer a bit, you can limit that size using those methods.
I'm looking at the page and it says the plant can also be grown outdoors as an annual.
It can, almost like
That's kind of fun for grass, you know, out in
yes.
there.
Yes. Yeah. And so if you have them and you want to, with our dry climate and our increased solar radiation because of our higher elevation, you would want to transition it into a shady location and then slowly expose it to sun because it would scorch just going from your house outside.
But this is one that would be great in a pot on the porch or the patio.
It would. They're easy to grow. And
people are usually looking for a grass.
They are.
Kind of an ornamental part of their pots.
Yes. And, you know, in areas like coastal San Diego, South Florida, where they rarely get frosts, these are actually grown outdoors. And they might, you know, if you're getting too cold, they'll bring them in or put them on a patio or something that's protected. But in the warmest areas of the United States, these are actually used as an outdoor plant.
So what conditions does it like?
As always, bright light off to the side of a south or west window is always ideal, turned once a week to keep it so that it doesn't send all of its leaves in one direction. But it does tolerate lower light levels, and if the light levels are too low, it'll lose its variegation because it needs to increase the amount of chlorophyll in the leaves to try to get as much light energy as it can. And it just needs to be fertilized during the summer with half-strength houseplant fertilizer. And it's generally happy.
So once a year, yeah. Fertilizer?
If you're twice? Using something like Osmocote, I would do it once or probably twice a summer, maybe once in March because the day lengths are increasing, and again sometime in June. And that would keep it happy. Otherwise, from February or June through October, half-strength houseplant fertilizer in liquid form.
And you say since the day lengths are increasing, that just helps it because it needs more energy?
It signals the plant, even though it's still cold outside, in more tropical areas, as those day lengths increase, it triggers it to grow. And just because we're cold outside, once we're starting to get 10 or 11 hours of sunlight a day, it starts needing that fertilizer because the light intensity and the light length, the length of time we have light, is also increasing.
Yeah, and this is also one that's very readily available.
It is.
You can find it just about anywhere, right?
It is. Any grocery store, garden center, like Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart will have it.
Anything else we need to know?
Just it's one that I think looks pretty when you maintain it once or twice a year. Easy to grow. Sometimes it's a conversation piece. It's great for kids.
Okay. Great for kids. We need to talk more about that this spring, vegetable gardens for kids, because there are some really wonderful vegetables that really get kids excited about gardening.
Yeah, and we have a few people that can talk about that.
Excited about doing that. As always, an article about the plant of the week is up now on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. You can call us now. The phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. Love to hear from you this morning. You can also text us a question at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you this morning, taking your calls 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Ton, you said you're getting a lot of calls in the office about whether people should start tilling with
yes,
snow on the ground.
People aren't wanting to maybe till in the snow, but they're already planning their gardens for the upcoming year. And there's a whole movement out there. It's called no-till gardening, that the strategy with this or the philosophy is that tilling, especially in a clay or loam soil, can break the soil structure up. And you absolutely don't want to do that, because in those kinds of soils, when you have leaf litter and other organic matter that breaks down, as it's breaking down, it actually has soil particles adhere to the or particle of organic matter, and it forms what are called aggregates, which these aggregates will hold on to soil nutrients better, and they create drainage in the soil and airspace, which is critical for plants. And when you till, especially excessively, you run the risk of breaking up these aggregates and making it so soil won't drain as well, and you make it so that it's less friendly to root growth, and it makes plants less healthy.
So what is tilling too much?
Tilling too much is a term we call recreational tilling. And I don't know if I told the story on the air last week or just during a break, but I grew up in Davis County on the sandbar coming off of Hill Air Force Base into West Point. And that sandy soil, it was almost just straight sand. You can't break the soil structure because the particles are so big. And so one of my dad's releases, I think it was almost relaxing, was to go out after we've watered and, you know, harvested in the garden and till that thing. And he would walk to the side of the tiller so there are absolutely no footprints. And it just looked beautiful. And we call this recreational tilling. And when you do that in a loamy or clay soil, you can really wreck your soil fast. And so I'm not against tilling at all. I have a tiller and I do till my garden at least once a year, sometimes twice. But what I will do is optimize when I till, and I'll put down compost and I till in the spring before I'm ready to prep my garden if I need to. This year I didn't. And I will till in the fall just because I like to put in compost in the fall, and that will help get rid of some insect pests, especially squash bugs and grasshoppers that are overwintering in the soil. Because a couple of tillings, or you turn the soil twice in the fall, and that will raise those egg sacs up into an area that will freeze and they'll be killed with the weather. And so you can till once, but after that, I would use a digging fork or a spade to turn the soil again to not wreck your soil structure.
So once or twice is not too much. And
it is not.
Preferably when you're using compost.
When you're using compost and to turn the soil when you are going to plant.
So you said you didn't till this last spring because you didn't need to. Why didn't you need to?
I made some informal raised beds in my garden. They're just big furrows, a couple feet wide and about a foot tall. And I had a lot of organic matter I put down that I kind of raked in a little bit and just left there. And so my soil in those raised bed areas and on top of the furrows was soft enough. I just dug a hole and planted in them. And when you do the no-till gardening, is advantageous to do things like this so that it's easier to plant, because the organic matter doesn't necessarily need to be thoroughly tilled in. If you will put down an inch or two and just get a shovel and lightly turn it, soil microorganisms and worms and other insects and things will do the work for you. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to do a lot of heavy digging. But to get your garden to that point, sometimes, especially if you have a clay soil, can take a lot of work and time. And it may take 5 or 6 or maybe up to 10 years to get the organic matter built up enough that you can just go stick a spade into the soil and without a lot of effort. And that's kind of what you're going for. And it's easier to do if you have those raised furrows, so that if you don't have the flat ground, it's a little easier to focus where the organic matter goes.
So why is there a no-till concept?
Because you're protecting the soil structure.
Okay.
And it's protecting the microorganisms and it's benefiting the soil, because that soil matrix is in place with the aggregates. And if you're putting organic matter on every fall and just lightly spading it in, it continues that cycle of continually introducing organic matter to keep those aggregates going.
Okay, so I guess I'm more of a no-till then, because I don't till every year for sure.
No.
But I till when I look at the soil and go, oh, this isn't not conducive to growing great things.
It sometimes isn't. And so the reason I like the option of tilling is because certain weeds can be controlled very easily with tilling. And so field bindweed, if you till at the right time of year, you can actually get some advantage to not really controlling it, but suppressing it for a number of weeks when you till and then clean up the debris. And so there are some things like that. There are advantages to tilling. You know, we talked about grasshoppers and squash bugs being suppressed with tilling. And so there are advantages to both. And that happy medium is to till no more than once or twice a year.
Okay. We have Bart on the line. He wants to chime in on spider plant this morning. Good morning, Bart.
Good morning, folks. Hey, listen to that spider plant deal.
Yeah.
They are real survivors.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to date me because 50 years ago or so, my wife was working with the young women. And they went into the beehive house, and in there was a spider plant. Supposedly, it had come across the plains in Brigham Young's wagon.
Whoa.
And they got some starch from it. And I still have that starch, and with those starch came a certificate of authentication. Whenever I give away one of these plants, I give a certificate with it.
That is awesome.
That's fine.
So
what
the plant is still viable, and the nice thing about them, they survive or no care. They form a potato in the plant that carries the water, and that will help it to survive, a week or two without any water.
Well, Bart, we love that story. Thank you so much for sharing.
You know, if I were Brigham Young, I would have probably spent more time with that plant than people. Probably
well,
would have been
I,
more relaxing.
Did. I don't know, but they are a nice plant, and everybody I give them to rave about them, and so. And no-till, I no-till last year, and it didn't work with a hoot because I flood irrigate, and when you flood irrigate with no-till, the water just goes swoosh through the.
Yeah.
And unfortunate thing of my Longkeeper tomatoes only had enough to get me through to Christmas, and then they are gone.
Oh, wow. You usually have them for several months after Christmas.
Yeah, but now I'm picking some off of some of these little ones I raised in the house. So.
Oh, right. That's all good.
Thanks, Bart, for your call
Thank
this
you,
morning.
Bart.
All right, bye.
What a great story about the spider plant.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah, it's just one of those that's just very easy to grow. And if you can drag that thing across the plains on a wagon.
Pretty hardy, isn't
it? It is.
All right. And if you are just tuning in, spider plant was the plant of the week. And you can check out more about it on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. The number for you to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We're taking your calls, and the phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We've been talking a lot about houseplants this morning. Our next listener says they have a Monstera plant. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Ton? It needs to be repotted because it's getting root-bound. However, they're afraid if they pot it, plant will get larger, and they don't up-pot it, I should say. They don't necessarily want it to be huge. Is there anything that they can do to encourage it to stay on the small side?
It's going to get larger no matter what.
It's just its nature.
Cut it back. And these Monstera plants are related to Pothos and Hartley Philodendron, and they're in the same family.
Okay, I need to look it up because I'm not sure if I know what that
and
is.
The Latin name, I can't even remember the common name of it, but the Latin name is Monstera deliciosa because it produces a fruit in tropical areas that is probably, as I've heard, it's tasty.
It looks like a lot like the Pothos, but the leaves are a lot different.
And most of the Pothos, the Epipremnum, the Pothos is Epipremnum, but a lot of the members of this family are climbing vines, and what we see as a houseplant is the immature leaf.
Mm.
And there's a juvenile and mature form of the foliage. And when the foliage matures, it develops this cut leaf form. And even Pothos can do that a bit. But the Monstera is a little less common because of its size. And I had some neighbors when I lived up in Davis County that had one. And they went on vacation on a road trip of the nation for an entire summer.
Mm-hmm.
And they forgot, when they hired somebody to water their house plants, they forgot about the Monstera.
Mm-hmm.
And it was upstairs in the hottest room in the house, no air conditioning. And this thing, they must have had a water leak in the wall, but it rooted out, burst the pot, rooted into the carpet padding to where this water leak was, and was utilizing the water from a slowly dripping pipe across the room.
It sounds like that plant had a brain.
Yes. And they
scary.
Came back, and this thing had rooted through their carpet and was a monster. And it tolerated 110, 120 degree temperatures. And it had, they said that the room looked like almost like a rainforest room because of how big it had gotten around there. And so the guy was like, I
wasn't sure.
He says, I wasn't sure if this thing was demon possessed or what. And he says, with that tenacity, I couldn't get rid of it. And so they were going to, because of the water leak, they needed to redo the room. And so they ripped everything out.
The root-bound plant.
And they cut the plant back and repotted it. And it's a lot better behaved now. But it was surviving. This species is a survivor.
So really, you have to keep buying a smaller plant if you really want to.
You do,
plant.
Or when you transplant it, just cut it back. You know, you'll have those vines
that can get
15 or 20 feet long. And so if it's at a length you like, as it shoots new growth, just tip prune it and it'll shoot out side growth.
Okay. All right. I was going to say, I'm always afraid, you know, create this ugly plant. Is it going to come
back? Yes, but they do need to be transplanted, not only because, you know, I know they're trying to avoid it getting bigger, but the quality of the potting soil that it's growing in declines after about 2 to 3 years, and it just needs fresh potting soil every so often, and they can cut it back. And eventually they may need to move it or give it away or something, but you can keep them in check.
Speaking of pothos, which was the plant of the week last week, and our texter wants to know, they say, we talked about it, and then they saw that their friend has a plant growing in the back of their aquarium with roots in the water. He says, she says, shouldn't that drown the plant?
Not necessarily. They won't survive as long in the water, and the fish may feed on some of the roots that kind of not really hurts it, but keeps it a little smaller. But 5 to 10 years ago, it was a thing to get peace lilies, pothos, and a few others to float in the aquarium, and they would root out into the water. And because the water oftentimes is aerated to keep the fish, the water is oxygenated, and that puts enough oxygen into the soil that the roots can get oxygen they need. But the lifespan of the plants are usually reduced, but you can absolutely do it.
Sounds like a fun experiment, though. All right. Next listener would like to know, they say they have a large patch of Bermuda in their lawn. They covered it with leaves 4 inches this fall, and they're going to burn those leaves in the spring, and they're wondering if that's going to kill the Bermuda grass.
No.
They really want to kill the grass. Come on.
That won't do a thing, unfortunately.
Burning stuff on top of it won't kill the Bermuda grass?
No. Nope. It, because it's dormant, and it re-roots from the roots. And soil is so dense that even if you start a fire on top of the soil, it would take hours to heat the soil to a point that it would actually kill the roots. Because if you can imagine, you say you took some lighter fluid on top of a stone and lit the lighter fluid on fire, top of the rock's going to heat up a bit, but within minutes, it's going to cool back down because of the density of the rock. And it just... it's so dense that it would take hours and hours to heat that soil up. Now, there are the Amish and maybe the Mennonites use a technique in some of their fields. You know, they have access to lots of hardwood trees, and they will make these big fires and get them down to coal, charcoal that's still burning the coals. And then they will dig trenches in their fields and fill the trench with charcoal and then cover it over and let it just heat. And that's a natural way to reduce the disease and weed seed load in their fields. But that's very labor intensive and very impractical for a number of reasons, because we don't have that many hardwood trees to even make it feasible. And you don't want to be using commercial charcoal to do that because of all the glues and things they use in them to hold the briquettes together. And so that's the only situation where I've seen something like that work. And I think that they're going to be better off if they don't want to use a chemical to control it, to in the summer taking the entire area and covering it in cardboard and then putting 4 inches of mulch, just inexpensive mulch, over the top of it and letting that sit for 2 years, a year to 2 years. They may need to put an
Who
inch or two.
Who has that patience?
Organic gardeners oftentimes that are just pesticide free.
Okay.
It works, but it will improve the soil. But the Bermuda grass seed are viable the seeds are viable in the soil for 3 to 4 years. And so they would need to monitor any newly germinating seed for that period of time before they got rid of it. Otherwise, control, there's two products out there that will do it. There's one made by BioAdvance, just called Bermuda Grass Killer, depending on where they live. J&J Nursery carries it. I think maybe Valley will carry it. Some of the garden centers, Utah, Salt Lake County. The other one is a product called Turflon Ester. And both of these will suppress Bermuda grass, but you need to use them regularly for a couple of years before you really kill it. And then you need to use a pre-emergent in March, or not in March, but in late April and again in mid-July, because the seeds will germinate all summer long.
All right. My other takeaway from what this conversation is that a weed torch is not going to work on Bermuda grass.
No, it won't. I mean, if you used one every week for a couple of years, it would. It would be fun, you know, just be out there.
You guys in your
Optimus
fire.
Prime and his weed torch. I know I've just mixed like several genres there. But it's one of those things that it is very vigorous. Roundup will kill it, but it will reseed readily for a number of years. If you're trying to stay away from that, then covering it with mulch for 1 to 2 years is the next option.
All right. Good to have options. Number to call with your questions this morning, 801-575-8255. Our phone lines are open. You can also text us at 57500. Good morning. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you this morning. Taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. We were talking about Bermuda grass and how to get rid of it, and the word weed torch came up. And so it's not going to work on Bermuda grass, but I am curious about the weed torch and when a weed torch is effective, not just as a toy for guys who like to play with fire, but when it really is it effective and not dangerous?
Well, you do need to be very careful. And in organic farming, they are used extensively for weed control. And so what the organic farmers will often do is go in and seed their crop. So they'll have bare soil, seed their crop, and they know that the weed seeds are going to germinate 2 to 3 days ahead of their, let's say, salad greens.
Okay.
And they will go in and time this because the salad greens might take a week to 10 days and the weeds 5 to 7. And they'll go in, you know, kind of gambling a little bit, maybe not really, but they will torch. They'll have a rig towed behind a tractor that has 5 to 10 flaming units, just like a weed torch, that they pull that are lined up between the rows and on top, and they burn all the weeds down going back and forth. And because we talked about the soil being so dense that it won't conduct enough heat down to the vegetable seeds to harm them, the vegetable seeds then germinate. And because it takes those weed seeds another, for the ones that are dormant in the soil, another 7 days, 10 days to germinate, the vegetable crop gets ahead of the weeds enough that maybe with one more careful, you know, burning of the weeds with the rig, that the vegetable crop will get big enough and shade out a lot of the weeds. And that's how that you would do that in a commercial situation. But they do this when the soil's moist. They've cleaned up all the debris so they don't start people or things on fire. And they're very, very careful about it. But it is a major tool for weed control in organic farming.
Mm-hmm. So how do the rest of us use it appropriately?
So you can go to your local hardware store or box store and buy a weed torch.
Sure.
And they hook up to a 20-pound propane tank.
Are they expensive?
$40, $50, $60 okay. bucks, in that range. And you do need to keep where the gas comes out on the flame end. You have to take a wire brush to that end quite frequently because you get a buildup of carbon that kind of ruins things. And you need to be very cautious. If you have a lot of vegetable debris or weed debris, you'll start it on fire in a second and you won't be able to get it out. And so you have to have bare soil, and the weeds that are, it's best to control weeds that are under about an inch tall, that's just germinated. And you don't have to burn them to a crisp. You just wilt them. And so you can run that weed torch and the leaves will change color a little bit. They'll go a little bit shiny and you can see them start to wilt down and you can move on. It only takes 2 or 3 seconds. And so you just, what people will do is put the propane tank on and put it in or on a hand truck and use a strap or a rope to tie it into the hand truck. And they just pull the hand truck behind them and have the weed torch. So that's how you can do it. People will use them on their gravel to burn the weeds down monthly. I have a neighbor that does it once a month on his gravel drive, and it works well.
Yeah, that's one circumstance that I think would be appropriate.
Yeah, but I have seen several situations. One of the biggest fires in state history was caused by somebody using a weed torch that got into dry plant material on a hillside. Mm-hmm. And I made a video once about using a weed torch safely, and it was unbelievable, the hate. How dare you put this? And when we're in a drought, you know, can you not read a room?
Wow.
And how tone deaf are you? I mean, it was how to be safe with a weed torch. And
sometimes
I pulled it down.
We see the worst in others.
We do. And it's just like people are waiting to pounce. You know, if you have nothing better to do than sit on social media and criticize people at their first opportunity, shame on you.
The weed torch thing is probably not going to work for me, but does it work on like morning glory? Like it scares me.
It will. If you have morning glory coming up and the vines are less than 6 inches long and you have bare ground between the vines, you can burn it back and it's just like going out and clipping it. And it will work, and it'll give you a couple of,
it
won't, but it'll give you a couple of weeks. And if you keep it up for 7 to 10 years, you'll eventually kill the morning glory.
Somebody's got a lot more patience than me. 7 to 10 years?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, let's see, what are we talking about? Oh, we are talking a lot about seeds and the quantity of seeds to grow. I know a lot of folks are now planning because of, with snow on the ground, that's about all you can do is plan for your vegetable garden. So we'll talk about seeding effectively when we come back on the KSL Greenhouse. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500 and check out the plant of the week on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page.